and 2000 UTC.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the July 13th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off with African women's football. The Copper Queens of Zambia are looking forward to their first appearance at the upcoming FIFA Women's World Cup, which will be co-hosted by Australia and New Zealand. The Copper Queens are preparing for the global showpiece after a successful run that saw them qualify for the Tokyo Olympics, finished third at last year's Women's Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Morocco, and win the 2022 CASAFA Women's Championship, beating current African champions South Africa on their home turf in the final. Myron Nika filed this feature team profile on the Copper Queens from Durban.
A bevy of fans draped in Zambia's traditional orange strip welcome the Copper Queens as they arrive safely in New Zealand, where they'll be based for the group stages of the FIFA Women's World Cup. Zambia flew in from Europe, where they set up camp for 3 weeks in preparation for the tournament. It was at that camp where head coach Bruce Mwape named his final 23-player squad for the competition. Led by prolific striker Barbara Banda, the team is stacked with talent, including Spanish Liga F forward Rachel Kundananji, as well as exciting young stars in Everine Katongo, Irene Lungu and Lushoma Mwiba. Mwape, who took over the team in 2018, described their maiden World Cup qualification as historic. He says their main aims are to play an exciting brand of football and qualify for the knockout stages.
Our expectation or our target is to at least qualify into the next, especially the knockout stage. Well, what we need is to do well in the opening matches and then get into another level where we now have to plan well if we have to go further in the tournament.
They may be new to the global stage, but this is a group of players who've spent many years together progressing through Zambia's age group system into the senior team. 23-year-old Banda, who plays for Chinese Super League team Shanghai Shengli, will wear the captain's armband at the World Cup. She says their understanding of each other's strengths and weaknesses will go a long way.
We've come a very long way. Starting from the U17, we played the U20 together. So I think three-quarters of our teammates, we know each other very well because we've been together for so long time. So looking at the coming in of Mapepa, I think we've got a great striking force. Together with the team, coming down to the midfield and the defense, goalkeeping, I think we're heading at one place.
Zambia have been drawn in Group C alongside Japan, Spain and Costa Rica. They kick off their campaign against the Japanese, who won the title back in 2011 on the 22nd of July.
There's no team to underrate. We are in a group where it's tough, but I think we are very much positive as a team, as Copper Queens. I think what matters mostly is for us, qualifying to the World Cup for the first time with a senior team, that give us a lot of motivation and the courage to go and compete with those teams. We know they are high-level teams that we are alongside in the group, but I'm sure and I'm very much positive that I and my team will do better.
The Football Association of Zambia have given the Copper Queens their full support, arranging the three-week camp in Europe, where they took on the likes of the Republic of Ireland, Switzerland and Germany. Their technical team has also been beefed up with the addition of American coach Lisa Cole as their technical advisor. The former USA under-17 coach has over 30 years of experience and was recently in charge of the Fiji women's national team. Before that, she served as director of women's football and head coach for Antigua and Barbuda's women's national team. Cole says the team is ready to execute their plans in unison.
Talked a lot about the partnerships that are naturally on the field. So the two center backs and the whole back line working up and back together. We've talked about the attacking mid and the target. That if the target checks back to find the ball, the attacking mid has to fill the space that they left. And so we've been talking about how we have to have good relationships with the people next to us within the game so that we can, one, cover for each other if necessary, but also just have a good interchange and make our play unpredictable in attack.
Barbara Bunda netted a brace against Germany to cap off a 3-2 victory in their final friendly before the competition is undoubtedly their star player.
Wow, it was a good game for us and a good preparation for the World Cup. You know, Germany is not a pushover team, but I think we really tried our best and at the end of the day, we carried 3 maximum points. That was important for us.
She's netted 28 goals in just 22 matches for the senior team, including 6 at the Tokyo Olympics.
I believe that it's a team of teamwork, because on my own, I can't do it. I get support from my teammates, so I give round applause to my teammates, because it's not an individual sport whereby I have to take it personal. I have to play alongside my friends, so I know in some other ways they might depend on me, but at the end of the day, we win as a team. And in everything that we do as a team.
As Zambia fine-tuned their preparations for the start of the World Cup, the team was rocked by an explosive report by British newspaper The Guardian, which claims coach Mwape was investigated by the Zambian FA over sexual misconduct accusations. The report claims the investigation has since been referred to FIFA and the police. Mwape would not comment on the situation once they arrived in New Zealand, with Captain Banda saying the focus of the players is solely on the pitch.
Mostly, I think, as players, our mind is just on the pitch. The rest we leave to the management, and whatever comes up, it's up to them. Our job is just to work on the pitch.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Myron Nyker in Durban, South Africa.
Thanks, Myron. I've been talking with Stephen Goff, the longtime soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper, about the Women's World Cup. Lindsay Horan and Alex Morgan have been named the co-captains of the defending world champion U.S. team. Steve, what are your thoughts on Morgan?
You know, she's been the U.S.'s top striker for years now, a leader in many ways. She's now 34 years old. She's proved you can be both a mom and a world-class athlete. She is the top striker for the U.S. team, and they will rely on her to score goals, no doubt. In terms of her leadership, I think it's a nice balance between Morgan and Lindsay Horan, leaders in their own ways. Morgan's a little more vocal. She's been with this team a long time. She understands what it takes to win. She has the mentality, and this is a team with a lot of young players, and so they need those mentors, those role models, those leaders. And Andonovsky thinks he has it with Morgan and Horan.
Steve, one of the young players on the U.S. team is Trinity Rodman, the daughter of former basketball star Dennis Rodman. She had 2 goals against Wales in a send-off match ahead of the Women's World Cup. Do you see Trinity Rodman as maybe a breakout star at the Women's World Cup?
Certainly possible. I think the first young American player who we're going to see with the capability of a big breakout is Sophia Smith, who's 22 years old. She'll play mostly on the right side of the attack. Trinity Rodman's 21, doesn't have as much experience as Sophia Smith, but wow, when she's out there, she's in the open field, creating. She's a spectacular player, and you know she's still maturing. She's still learning the game. She's only been a pro for a couple of years. And I think we'll see her gain some valuable playing time and perhaps a starter here and there. big things ahead for Trinity Rodman.
Trinity Rodman's head coach on the U.S. team is Vlatko Andonovski. He was appointed in 2019, replacing Jill Ellis after the U.S. team lifted the Women's World Cup trophy in France. Steve, how would you describe Andonovski's coaching style?
In terms of tactics and technical approach, there's not a big difference. The U.S. plays a typically aggressive style with three forwards and often with two attacking midfielders. From that standpoint, there's not a big difference. Andonovski has bonded well with his players. I think there's a very good rapport there. I think it might be a little better rapport with the players than Jill Ellis had, just from anecdotal evidence. I think they like playing for him. He's going to have to make adjustments as the tournament goes on, whether it's with changing out personnel, adapting to what another team is doing that might cause some problems for his team. And he's on the spot. He was the coach of the Olympic team a couple of years ago, and they fell short. Anytime the U.S. does not get to a championship game, it's a disappointment. And they did not get there at the Olympics in 2021. So there is some pressure on him to get it right and make a deep run in this World Cup.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I'm talking with Steve Goff, the soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. Steve, I know you've been writing how the American women are going for an unprecedented third consecutive Women's World Cup trophy. Looking back on the four previous trophies by the American women, Steve, is there one in particular that maybe stands out for you?
Well, certainly 1999, which was their second championship. It was held in the U.S. That was really the turning point for women's soccer in this country and to some extent to the rest of the world. Drew enormous crowds. They really became rock stars during that tournament. Extremely popular players that won a championship at the Rose Bowl in front of 90,000 people and an enormous TV audience. So I think that one, with the drama that unfolded during the game against China, the final, and then winning it in a penalty kick shootout. Beyond that, championships are always memorable. And so you remember things like Carly Lloyd scoring a hat trick in the 2015 final against Japan in Vancouver, including a goal from half field. And then 4 years ago, Rapinoe had an amazing tournament. That team had a lot of close games, but they almost seemed destined to win the thing. And they did against the Netherlands in the final. So those things stand out outside of the U.S. Germany's won. Germany won 2003-2007, and China and Norway were early powers. And now we're starting to see, a team like England, where the sport is so important to the masses, really take off on the women's side. So this is, I think this is a big moment for English soccer, English football as well.
In terms of English football, Steve, Ellen White bagged six goals for the Lionesses at the 2019 World Cup in France. That tally was equal to what Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe had for the USA. Rapinoe ended up winning the Golden Boot. How do you see White performing at this 2023 World Cup, Steve?
Well, England, like a lot of teams, England will go into this tournament down some players. There's been a spate of injuries and, ACLs in female athletes is certainly a big part of this. So, Ellen White will take on a greater responsibility with three of her major teammates out with injuries. U.S. has injuries, Mallory Swanson and Becky Sauerbrunn won't play in this tournament. England's going to be a fun team to watch. They're coming off the high of the European Championship. And despite those absences, they are loaded with talent and confident talent, players that are really performing in their domestic league. And that's the breeding grounds for world-class players is the day-to-day, the week-to-week league competition. And Alan White is certainly a product of that.
Steve, I know hopes are high in Australia. What about in the other World Cup co-host country, New Zealand? How do you rate New Zealand's chances?
Well, you know, New Zealand's a small country, small population. They qualify for the World Cup regularly, coming out of the Oceania region. You know, they are competitive. They're okay. They I think they hold their own, but in terms of how far they can go in this tournament, I think the goal for New Zealand is just to get out of the group. You know, if you can get out of the group, things can happen. And as a host, that's what you want. And if you look at their group, they're in Group A with Norway, Philippines, and Switzerland. You know, they got a shot. You know, Norway's not a big power anymore. Philippines is in the World Cup for the first time. Switzerland is an improving country, but certainly not a world power. So I think New Zealand has its eyes on getting out of the group and then seeing what happens from there.
Steve, four African teams, Morocco, Nigeria, South Africa, and Zambia, will compete at the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup. Morocco and Zambia making their debuts. The Zambian women scored a big 3-2 victory over host Germany last week in a friendly Women's World Cup warm-up match. Your reaction, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, Zambia being Germany in a friendly in Germany was stunning. And it wasn't just some fluke 1-0 game. It was a 3-2 score. So there's something to it there. We don't know much about Zambia. I don't think many opposing coaches do, but you know, as the game improves around the world, as the baseline improves, you're going to see teams like Zambia make its mark and shake things up a little bit against more established teams. You know, I think the strength in Africa, you know, remains Nigeria. You know, a program that's been in several World Cups and has produced some talent and sent players to top leagues in Europe and in the U.S. So, I think eyes on the African teams heading into a very unpredictable World Cup.
Finally, Steve, will you be packing your bags for the trip down under to cover this 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup?
Yeah, I'll be packing my bags with much cold weather gear, warm clothes. it's winter down there, and so we're expecting some cooler temperatures and a bit of rain. So a nice escape from the heat and humidity of the Northeast U.S., but certainly a change in climate at a time when we're usually in T-shirts and shorts.
Stephen Goff, the soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. Thank you, Steve.
My pleasure, Sonny, anytime.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, my bumper's in D.C.
The Voice of America's English to Africa service is celebrating its 60th anniversary on August 4th. Help us celebrate by sharing your thoughts about the Sunny Side of Sports. Send a voice message or text to this WhatsApp number, +1-202-258-3076. Recall a favorite memory. That number again, +1-202-258-3076. 202-258-3076. And thanks for 60 years of support. In terms of Sunny Side of Sports memories, I'll be wearing my South Africa football jersey on Friday for a special television appearance. The jersey was a gift from Mark Ouma. Mark gave it to me at the 2010 FIFA World Cup, which South Africa hosted. Mark passed away 7 years ago at the age of 55. He was our former Daybreak Africa sportsman, and his spirit lives on every time I put on that South Africa football jersey. Rest in peace, Mark, and thank you for all of your support.
Coming up on the next Science edition of Press Conference USA, it's a conversation with the former director of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases, Dr. Anthony Fauci, MD. Hello, this is Rick Pantaleo. Dr. Fauci and I will take a look back at his career in medicine and public health and his efforts to mitigate pandemics such as HIV/AIDS and COVID-19. This Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 0905 and 2005 UTC, right after the international news.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news. Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week, for the 5-minute VOA newscast. We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from across the world. Give us 5 minutes, and we'll give you the world. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
In African athletics, Kenyan star Eliud Kipchoge will once again run the Berlin Marathon on September 24th. Berlin organizers announced Thursday that the 38-year-old Kipchoge has reached agreement with them to test his speed on the fast course, where he twice has set world records. In 2018, Kipchoge clocked 2 hours, 1 minute, and 39 seconds in Berlin. And last year, he lowered his world record by 30 seconds with a time of 2 hours, 1 minute, and 9 seconds. This will be the sixth time Eliud Kipchoge has run the Berlin Marathon. In a statement, Kipchoge said, and I quote, "On my road to the Paris Olympic Games, I like to go back to the Berlin Marathon, since to me, this is the perfect preparation. I have great memories there, and I look forward to run the streets of Berlin again, together with the thousands of runners who will join." After setting the world record last year in Berlin, Eliud Kipchoge had this to say.
"I feel good. I am happy to... I say 3 days ago that I want to run a course record. And if that course record can be translated to a world record, to also to personal best, then I will appreciate. I'm appreciating today, actually, officially, about the world record. So I'm happy for it. I always don't believe in limits. I don't know what the limits are. I always say no human is limited. That you see that the first year was at 950, which can tell the general public that cutting are coming."
Eliud Kipchoge, the man who does not believe in limits, will next year try to become the first runner in history to win 3 Olympic gold medals in the marathon. He's currently one of 3 athletes who have won 2 Olympic marathon titles. The late, great Ethiopian Abebe Bikila won Olympic gold at Rome 1960 and Tokyo 1964. And the German Waldemar Sierpinski was crowned Olympic marathon champion at Montreal 1976 and Moscow 1980. Pro basketball. Los Angeles Lakers superstar LeBron James, who is also 38 years old, like Eliud Kipchoge, says he will return to the court for a 21st NBA season. In February, LeBron surpassed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and became the NBA's all-time scoring king. LeBron currently has 38,652 career points. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2023, let's listen to LeBron's reaction after he overtook Kareem.
I never, ever talked about being an all-time scorer in NBA history. It's never even been a thought of mine until I started seeing my numbers get closer and closer. I was like, oh, wow.
Oh, wow. LeBron broke a scoring mark that had stood for nearly 40 years. He passed the previous record set by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar by scoring 38 points in a 133-130 loss to the visiting Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, Kareem's signature shot was the skyhook, but LeBron broke his record on a turnaround fadeaway jump shot with about 11 seconds left in the third quarter in Los Angeles.
I know a lot of people wanted me to go to the skyhook to break the record or one of my signature dunks. But my fadeaway was a signature play as well, and I was able to get it and it touched nothing but the bottom of the net.
Nothing but net. LeBron says it was just an incredible feeling after he made his record-breaking shot.
Tonight I actually felt like I was like sitting on top of the arena tonight when that shot went in and the roar from the crowd. I'm not sure if I would be able to feel that feeling again.
Meanwhile, the feeling among Lakers fans was one of excitement and anticipation during LeBron's record-breaking pursuit. Just a few hours before tip-off, two courtside seats were listed on Ticketmaster for $75,000 each. Yes, you had to be a high roller or a big spender to watch LeBron. Meanwhile, LeBron talks about the pressure he felt during his record-breaking campaign.
Didn't press myself, didn't over-exude too much energy, when it comes to, the record. I felt pretty good. I felt in a good rhythm. And once I get in a good rhythm, then I feel like I make any shot on the floor.
LeBron hugged the previous record holder, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who came out onto the floor after the record-breaking shot. In a statement, Kareem said, and I quote, "LeBron's career is one of someone who planned to dominate this game. He had the size and the talent to step right into the NBA, and he immediately had his effect. It's gone on for 20 years now. He has that indefinable essence that you call leadership that people want to get behind him." Kareem Abdul-Jabbar saluting LeBron James. With more on LeBron James and his record-breaking career, here's the AP's Norman Hall.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar overtook Wilt Chamberlain's scoring record in 1984. But later that year, the man who would surpass Jabbar was born in Akron, Ohio. LeBron James went from prep school to the pros at 19. James would play 11 years in Cleveland with a four-year break in Miami, where he impressed coach Eric Spoelstra with his work in games and practice.
He doesn't get bored with that process. You can tell he's like a computer.
Laker coach Darvin Ham says James still works hard at being a complete player at age 38.
He's just a kid who's grown before our eyes, and the last 20 years at this level has done nothing but play the right way and make the play that's in front of him.
NBA Commissioner Adam Silver says James breaking the record is impressive because of his style of play.
I think it makes it that much more special that he'd rather be known for his assists than his baskets.
James's achievements include four NBA championships and two Olympic gold medals. I'm Norman Hall.
Thanks, Norman. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.